Welcome to the Faded Spade Podcast with your hosts, Tom Wheaton and Sean McCormick.
Welcome to the first ever Faded Spade Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Wheaton, founder and CEO of Faded Spade, with my illustrious co-host, the poker boss, Sean McCormick, director of poker operations extraordinaire to some. Director of Poker Operations, non-extraordinaire to others. What's up, buddy?
That's a pretty accurate statement for sure.
Isn't that about everybody, though? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But,
look, I just, thanks for cleaning your office, man. I mean, you're the first ever Faded Spade podcast, you know? Really glad you put in some time and effort to clean up your office.
Yep. So this is the life of living with a teacher. So
yes.
My wife puts out a message out there, you know, on the, you know, social media verse about, hey, anybody got anything they want to donate to the kids or anything like this? And then she puts out like an Amazon wish list and all this stuff. And everything you see back here is for the kids. It's incredible. Like, what is in my house? There's just water and backpacks and pencils and pens and markers and crayons.
I can't make fun of you for that anymore. It's for the kids, man.
It's for the kids. So
it took me like 30 minutes to hang one of these. That's, you know, my wife was in front of me for it. Like maybe 30 minutes to hang one.
The whole office, that one little picture back there, that's mine. That's
it looks good.
Saw a little painting my buddy did. It's a Game Boy that says respect your elders. Kind of cool.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Cool. That's might be a word I'd use for it.
Yeah, cool. Oh, well, there's also know which way to point here, but that on the wall there, that's a hole in one trophy. Yes, not mine, my dad's. I could never hit a hole in one. I can't find the green if I wanted to. So,
well, very cool. Well, hey, look, actually, I want to make sure we learn about you and your dad, because not only are you our co-host, but you're going to be our first ever Faded Spade podcast guest.
Let's do this
later today. So, and I wanted to go through the purpose of why we're doing the Faded Spade, you know, podcast for our listeners. And really what I think it comes down to for me, and, you know, I know you're going to give your why too, but it comes down to the fact that our industry is one of the most entrepreneurial, passionate industries out there. And really, this is a forum where we're going to be bringing on guests who have either started really successful businesses in the industry, and even some out, or have really successful careers in the industry. And we want to hear their story. And we want to hear the story that's really untold about their either entrepreneurship or their career, because I think that there are going to be a lot of listeners that not only listen, you know, for our guests or for our content, but it can be a way to inspire and kind of engage and kind of educate other people who are trying to build their own businesses or advance in their career or just have a vision for their life and they want to get on a path to get there. And I think a lot of our guests, and hopefully through our content too, we can inspire some folks and we can share those stories for relatability. And I think that serves a great purpose. And exposing this side of our industry as well, I think can only do great things.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, the two of us have had a very different way into the industry. Me starting in the more traditional way of getting into the industry, obviously starting as a poker dealer and learning my way up. And then you from the side of, you know, we need this product in our industry. You know, not only do I love to play the game, I love to improve the game. And look what you've done. I mean, it's pretty incredible. So kudos to you. And I'm looking forward to this.
Long way to go, brother. But thanks. So one thing we do have in common is the passion for our industry. I mean,
not our hair.
Yeah. Look, you've got some time still. All right. Look, I know you're a year older. Right. I know I've had to do this for about, you know, 10 years. I haven't reached 40 yet. So go ahead and brag the fact that you're 40 and have hair and I don't. But look, I'm handsome. You're going to be ugly for the rest of your life.
You're handsome on the inside.
But my mom tells me I am. So is my wife.
Yes.
That's going to get edited out. So, all right. Well, I want to do a few things for our listeners. So we talked about the purpose. We're going to kind of have a cadence to this every single time we do a podcast where we're going to have a few different segments. So let me run through those. So we talked about interviews with notable people in and outside the industry to learn those entrepreneurial and business stories, those journeys. That's going to be called Founder Hour when I'm interviewing Someone like one of our first few guests coming up here in a couple of weeks, Matt Berkey or Jason Somerville, when they're on the show, to learn about that entrepreneurial journey. And then Sean is also going to be interviewing leaders in the industry to learn about their story. I think you're still coming up with a name for that, right?
Yeah, we'll figure out something. Yeah,
or hey, you know what? Maybe we'll put a poll on Twitter and see what people want to call it.
I like it.
A little interactivity.
Yes.
So that's going to be what anchors every show. And again, we're going to start off with Sean today. And then Sean wants to interview me for the second one. And this way you guys get to know us a little bit more personally. And then we're going to transition into to our guests. But there are also going to be a couple other segments. So let me run through them. So the first one that we're going to run through, and we'll do one today, is going to be called On the Clock. And if you've ever seen that show, what is it, First Take, Sean?
Yeah, First Take.
Yeah, it's going to be something like that, where Sean and I are going to pick a topic, or we'll get feedback of topics from our listeners. And we are going to debate that topic for about 5 minutes or so. So that's On the Clock. And why don't we just run through that now? What do you say? You want to do it?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So Sean and I were brainstorming a bunch of different topics, and we're going to have some good ones. And I think this one is great, but we're going to go ahead and debate the topic of reentry today in the poker world, right?
I mean, just swing for the fences right away. We're just,
well, if I was swinging for the fences, you know, we'd be doing private games, but that will come. So don't worry, that's going to come.
That might get edited out.
And let me say here, all opinions are our own. They are not the opinions of any employer or company we represent. I think very important to say.
Correct.
Well, let's go through this. So On the Clock, the topic is reentry. We'll give each other about a minute and a half. Sometimes we're going to agree on things. Sometimes we're going to disagree, but we'll just share our perspectives on it from our different perspectives. And then I think what we'll do after that is we'll also open up that conversation on Twitter and some other social media channels so you guys can join in on the conversation. All right. So Sean, reentry, why don't you take it away, man? Define it. And what are your thoughts on it for the industry at large?
So, you know, it's been quite some time now that we've had reentry tournaments. You know, back in the day, we used to have what we call rebuy tournaments, which were basically if you were under a certain amount of chips or went to the felt, you could rebuy at the same table and keep playing against your opponents, even double buy and get bigger stacks. And it would create this monster stack kind of thing. But there were a lot of... you know, there was a lot of tournament implications to doing rebuy events, and they've kind of gone by the wayside. Believe it or not, Matt Savage came up with the idea of reentry, which is basically you have to be dust. You have to be out of the tournament, and you go register as a brand new player. You redraw into the tournament randomly. You could redraw into the same seat you're in. I've seen it happen, you know, especially if you have a tournament that's 40, 50 players, there's only a limited amount of seats. You know, if you're sitting on 40 players exactly and you bust out and you go to buy in, well, guess what seat you're getting? It's pretty right. obvious. Right. There's only one seat to draw from, but we try to keep that as random as possible. But we've gone down this rabbit hole of reentry events. And it, in the beginning, I think a lot of people loved it. You know, it created these massive prize pools for a smaller amount, and it kept people, the players were happy because the prize pools were high, and the operators were obviously happy because it kept the players engaged and in their property.
Right.
There's pros and cons, obviously, to any innovation in poker. For the most part, I think, I want to say reentries have been positive, but I'm kind of neutral on this because I think they're really region or location specific.
Okay.
And
so here's my take on it.
Into depth on that. Why don't you tell me?
Yeah, here's my take on it. And then I'm going to come at it from a player perspective. And remember, I've only transitioned from cash games to tournaments over the last year and a half or two, right? And I am not a professional. I am a part-timer, you know, I study, I'm learning tournament strategy, but mostly a cash game player. So here's my take on it for someone that is not a consistent 10K buy-in or above. As a player in those types of tournaments, I do not want to play Daniel Negreanu 10 times or Berkey 10 times, or et cetera, 5, 6, 7, 8 times, right? Because the skill level of those types of players who can afford these reentries, right? Because they're doing this for a living over and over again, it kind of reduces my chances if I've got one bullet to cash or to make it as far as I possibly could if these highly skilled players were only able to enter once, right? Now, that's my opinion based on my level of play and where I'm at and et cetera. So I think the flip side of that is, well, then don't play in them, right? Then play in something that's more your bankroll, you know, 1500, 2500, et cetera. And then someone asked me about it and I'm like, yeah, I kind of like reentry because I feel like I at least have some kind of maybe higher level of skill than the average player at those buy-ins, maybe. And I know like I can actually afford to buy in 2 or 3 times and that would benefit me, right? So I think it comes down to the fact where reentry as a whole, I really like it, you know, for the business as a player, as long as it's buy-ins that like are manageable and against players who I feel like I have somewhat of a either even keel or competitive advantage on. But to go play like a 10K that has unlimited reentry, that's where I'm kind of like, ooh, how are we going to get more amateur part-time players like myself playing those games when reentry is available and those folks likely don't have more than one bullet? So that's kind of where I'm at. But if I'm a professional player with a huge bankroll, I'm probably going to want it. I'm probably going to like it. But what's your personal take on it? Or even maybe not personal, but business take in terms of why is it important for poker rooms to actually run it that way? Like what benefits does it provide?
So speaking from, you know, I've been in poker rooms. I've worked in poker rooms all over the country. I haven't done anything really outside of the country, although I have a lot of friends that, you know, globally who talk about how they handle these tournaments. So let me just take it from the Las Vegas perspective first.
Yep.
I think reentry is a must in Las Vegas. You're catering to such a large, enormous crowd from all over the world, and nobody wants to travel to their favorite casino in Las Vegas and take a bad beat, you know, get the aces versus the kings, bust out within the first couple levels, and then just twiddle their thumbs. You know, back in the day when everything was a freeze out, the greatest thing was everybody would move from tournaments to cash games. Mm-hmm. So the operators didn't really have to worry because we're keeping the business there. Mm-hmm. But through reentry and through the years, tournament poker has kind of separated itself. You know, there's not as many of you like how you play, saying that I play cash and I play tournaments. The crossover from tournaments to cash is a very, very small number now. Yeah. Even the guys that you speak of, the Daniels and the Helmuts of the world and stuff like that, the majority of these guys, they live and breathe for tournaments.
Yeah.
And they're almost recreational when they're playing cash games. They're just having fun. You know, guys like Helmy put a lot of tweets out there where he loses in cash games, whether it's here in Vegas or in California and stuff like that. And it sounds like a lot of fun. But then you watch the same guy play tournaments, and it looks like he wants to like flip the table sometimes.
Right.
That's his meat and potatoes.
It's their life. It's their
Their livelihood, and that's their life. So, you know, in a perfect world, I'll be honest, as an operator, I'd love everything to be freeze outs and everybody go, boom.
I think that statement's going to surprise some people.
That should surprise you because all I do is run reentries. Everything we run is reentries. So that's going to surprise a lot of people because, like I said, in a perfect world, it would be, they would come in, they play the tournament, it would be a freeze out. And if they bust out, they would head to the cash games. But the problem is, especially for the Vegas market, when players bust out, if you didn't give them another option, they're going to your competitor across
the street. Yeah, and I get that.
Tournament. 100%. So that's the tough issue. And I don't think that is, that works for everyone. I would gladly, if I worked in a room that didn't have another card room within 50, 60 miles, I'd gladly run a lot more freeze outs with guarantees and all that stuff. And that's another thing to talk about is guarantees. Yeah. Everybody loves these fat guarantees and these super deep stacks, but they want freeze outs too. And they just don't, you know, we didn't have these monster $500,000 guarantees for $500, $1,000 tournaments back in the day.
Reentries is a huge part of that.
With the freeze out format, it just didn't work. No operator would be crazy enough to take that kind of liability because you'd miss. You have a finite amount of players. And I know when we discuss guarantees, obviously re-entry is part of that topic. We're saying, okay, we're going to get X amount of unique entries and X amount of re-entries. So we should hit this guarantee 99% of the time or whatever we come up with.
And I would say, like, I think a good piece of advice to players who typically buy in for 500, 1000, 1500, right? Just double check, like make sure, you know, if it's unlimited re-entry or, you know, and I like these at two or three times re-entry with a cap, like make sure you know that and make sure you come equipped to know, okay, look, I'm going to fire one bullet or I'm going to have to fire multiple bullets here to have a better chance or odds. Make sure you know that going in. You know, me, those buy-ins, I'm okay with unlimited entry. 10Ks and more, I'm probably going to look for the tournament that's single entry, right? And that was a big decision into playing the prior Aria Bobby Baldwin Classic, which is now the Summer Championship. 10K, at the time last year, it was single entry or maybe double entry versus playing, versus something like Five Diamond, which is unlimited re-entry. Right. And that was a big factor for me because of where I'm at in my poker tourney journey.
Compare those two tournaments.
Right.
One tournament get nearly 200 players and the other one over 1,000 players.
That's crazy, right?
I mean, just to think about, not to say that the Five Diamond, it's probably the biggest tournament outside of the WSOP main.
I agree.
That we have here in Las Vegas for a 10K. You know, it's just a massive event that everybody loves to come to right before Christmas. It's one of my favorite events.
Yeah.
Kudos to them for what they've built. I believe that was the largest. Actually, I know for sure it was the largest WPT event, 10K of all time, main tour stop. It's just...
I remember.
Yeah.
I remember Craig called his shot. And then I remember World Poker Tour was so happy about it. And it was funny. Those were the two tournaments I was choosing between for the World Poker Tour, the Five Diamond or the, we'll call it the Aria Summer Championship now. And that was the deciding factor, re-entry.
Come on, humble brag. We know you want to talk about how you cashed.
We're not going to talk about it, dude. We're not going to talk about it. I'm 6-0 for 4 in my next 4 tournaments. So it's all right.
Let me go back a little bit and, I know our 5 minutes is coming up.
No, here. Let's keep going. This is fine. This is good. I think this is a topic people want to hear about. And look, we're going to ask you guys, if you want to talk about this topic more, hit us up at the Poker Boss on Twitter, at Tom Wheaton _ on Twitter, at Faded Spade Cards. We're happy to engage in this type of dialogue as some interactivity, for the podcast. So
100%. You mentioned earlier that for a 10K, you'd rather it be a freeze out style. And for 500, 1,000, or 1,500, you don't mind the fact that it's a unlimited reentry or multiple reentry. But just remember,
me personally,
one person's 500 is another person's 10.
Yes, yes.
And that's something to, I've heard it all the way down to the $140 level. Yeah. These should all be freeze outs. Yeah. And again, I think it's very difficult to look at tournament poker globally as one thing. It's not like the TDA board or all the TDA members could get together and be like, yeah, we're going to make everything freeze outs. That's why as a non, you know, I call myself a non-tournament guy. I call myself more operations. As a non-tournament guy, I love going to the TDA summit, which we just had, and giving my perspective from an operator's end, because sometimes TDs and tournament directors or tournament managers get a little, let's call it, carried away. They think that
they're focused on their business, right?
But sometimes they feel like they can make rules that encompass everybody. And don't get me wrong, everything the TDA board and the TDA members have done far outweighs your every business. Every dialogue that you have like that, open discussion, is going to have its good and bad. And
yeah, and we're both huge supporters of the TDA.
Oh God, the work they've done is absolutely incredible. And I'm honored to be there every other year and put my 2 cents in. I think it's eye opening to people to hear it from an operator's perspective. Not that there's not operators there, obviously. TDA member Johnny Crooms is. Yeah. a director of poker ops, but he's a guy who came through tournaments where I'm more of a guy who came through the live side, and it's a little different. So
I can't wait to hear about that. I'm going to dive into that during your little interview coming up now too. Nope. So look, I mean, to close this out on the clock, we're over the clock. Heck, maybe it's a virtual clock, but I think it's a cool topic to talk about. I think it's one of those things. Reentry is here to stay. I don't think it's going away, but I think what I like to see is that different providers are varying up the types of tournaments they have to appeal to different folks, different strokes. But 100% reentry is here to stay. I think it should be here to stay. But to our listeners, educate yourself. Make sure you know what it is. Make sure you know what you're signing up for and that you plan ahead appropriately, right?
100%. And I'm a big guy. I'm a big proponent for, you know, we all have businesses to run. You know, people that run poker rooms, we all have business to run. Vote with your dollars. Vote with your dollars. Right. That's the only way that we know whether we're doing something. That's the best metrics ever. If I run a tournament one day and it's got 100 players, and then I run it again a month later and it's got 25, something went wrong. Something. So that tells me back to the drawing board. But if we keep constantly hearing, we don't want reentry, we don't want reentry, and the amount of entries goes up like this, it's really hard. It sounds like those people are speaking for a vast minority, which I know is not the case here.
Right.
People just love to play poker like I love to play poker. So at some point, you're going to end up being in those tournaments anyways, even if you don't think it's the most positive EV for you. Because I'll tell you, as a recreational player, I am at a disadvantage in reentry events. I get that. Yeah. I get that. Do I play them? Absolutely. Absolutely do. I love the game. And, you know, any chance I get, even if I take the worst of it a little bit, you know, there's a lot of games I play. I take the worst of it. You know, I play
golf. I've seen your GPI, buddy. Woo! Got him.
The guy's been playing tournament poker for 2 years. And he
you know, I mean, it was a 15 years of cash tournaments is, I'll tell you what, I absolutely love the tournament, like training. Like I love that process, but so much variance.
I'm more old school. Although I completely give it up for these guys that, you know, as they say, get in the lab and learn the game and all that stuff. I think that's fantastic. Me, I'm more old school. I'm all about feel. And it's probably why I don't have the results that I could. But I also don't have the time to put in. But I really appreciate the guys that and girls that do. I think it's fantastic. And I love reading about it online in the forums and on people's personal, like Facebook and Twitter, how engaged they are. They say, you know, I'm going to take this class or that class, or even try to start my own class. And it's really, really cool. I wish I could have more time, and maybe someday I will. And
I can't wait for Berkey to join us and hear that whole solve for why, you know, training story about how it came about and where they're taking the company and his whole entrepreneurial journey. Cause I think what they're doing is so innovative. And then, you know, we're talking about tournament series real quick before we get onto the next segment, but one of the most fun tournament series you and I have been at together was Run It Up, you know, with Jason, and can't wait to hear his entrepreneurial story and how he's grown his business from nothing to something, you know?
See, and that event was literally the most fun poker event I think I've ever been to in my life. There's some other really great ones too. Through the course of these podcasts, I'm for sure going to talk about all the fun stops. Cause as you know, I'm a big hashtag make poker fun again guy.
I think
I was one of the first people out there that, you know, me and a couple other guys, we were like hashtagging, you know, industry leaders hashtagging that, because we know, yes, everybody wants to make money, but if you keep the game fun and engaging, you're going to bring in new revenue streams. And that's what we're missing. 100%. There's some huge components, you know, some key components that are holding us back from the next boom, and fun is one. And the female element in poker is a huge one.
Yeah.
And those almost go together. Nobody wants to sit at a table that's not fun and get berated and stuff like that. And making it fun for all, making it engaging for all will bring in this missing element. And I will tell you, coming up, this new generation, these 18, 19, 20 year olds, of course, they can't play yet, but when they hit 21, 22, 23, these guys are playing games online right now, like the Fortnites and all these other games where it's just super interactive and super fun. Yeah, it's frustrating to lose games, stuff like that. It's just like it's frustrating in poker to lose games, stuff like that. But they're fun and they're going to keep them coming back. And poker's going to need to evolve to get that fun aspect, to get that next generation to say, yeah, I don't mind sitting down all day long and playing 10-hour sessions, but it has to be engaging. It has to be, they're playing at such a high, you know, level of entertainment and you know, it's so high level interactive that sitting at a poker table all day doing this, it's not going to work for them.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm glad actually, I didn't know that you had that opinion, right? And there's a few others in the industry that I know do that I've connected with on it. And hey, man, no reason why you and I can't do something to change that.
Let's do it.
So, and let's make those topics also be deeper topics on the next few podcasts because I think they deserve it. Amen. All right. So that's a first draft of On the Clock, right? And I'm sure this thing will evolve as we do more and more, but the next segment we have is called The Grind. And this is supposed to be 5 or 10 minutes or so of news and highlights, whether it's from the poker world, the entertainment world, the sports world, or just things that are like being discussed right now across the industry. But what we're going to do today for it is we're going to focus just on what Sean calls the poker summer camp. I've never heard that term, but the poker summer camp. So we'll just do a little review of the summer. Talk about some things that stood out to us and share some thoughts on it. And then we'll dive into Sean's interview. So poker summer camp. So where did you come up with that term? Or is that a term that I'm just naive and don't know about that has existed for a while?
That's, I don't know if it's been out for a long time, maybe a couple of years or something like that. But it's a term that, you know, it's Las Vegas summer. I mean, there's no better place to be from Memorial Day weekend through mid-July than Las Vegas if you're a poker fan. And, you know, poker summer camp means basically it's all the big events, obviously the World Series of Poker being the massive giant they are, and then all the other tournament series that are around town because it's quite incredible. And it's just called summer camp because you're here for 7 weeks.
Oh, God. I'm amazed at how many tournaments have just flooded the market even outside the WSOP and still get a ton of entries. Like that wasn't like that like a few years ago. I'm amazed at what's happened. I mean, poker's alive, man. I don't care what anybody says. Poker is alive.
I can't even remember. Like this isn't that far back. And I feel like, you know, maybe I am getting old, Tom. Like I'm starting to forget the summers, but I can't even remember pre-Colossus days.
Right.
That's only like 4 years ago or whatever the first inaugural Colossus was. And it's so funny how it's changed so much in those couple of years. I mean, people weren't even talking about Colossus this year. Everybody was talking about the Big 50 and obviously having a massive tournament with a rake-free entry is enormous. And, you know, a lot of people around town try to mirror something on a smaller scale. Everybody's got like their key event, you know, that they call. It's all kinds of different names and whatnot. But
I'll tell you what stood out for me this year was Party Poker Live coming to the U.S. to do millions at the Aria. Not a shameless plug. I just really think that's a very cool occurrence for our industry, and I think they're doing things really well. I thought the WPT Tournament of Champions was awesome. Again, not plugging any particular location. But when I think of the summer, I've always thought of World Poker Tour TOC. I've thought of World Series of Poker main event and everything that comes along with that. And I think going forward, we're going to start thinking about a few other things. I think we're going to start thinking about Party Poker Millions. I think that's going to become a staple. And coming up soon, who knows how often they're going to do it, but this whole Triton $1 million buy-in tournament this summer, I mean, that's going to, I think, make some waves. And sure. I think you're going to have those big four in some capacity always happening in the summer, along with all the other casinos getting into their events. And it's just going to get bigger and bigger. But what stood out to me was at the World Series of Poker, at the main event, I played my first one this year, didn't cash, made it to the end of day two, not going to tell any stories. It's just a great experience. But what stood out to me across that whole experience, whether it was playing in any casino I played in the summer, the passion that people have for this game and the respect and the camaraderie that everybody had for each other going through it was like I've never seen before. Like day one at the WSOP, everybody so just like connected by being there and experiencing it, even though we're all playing each other and trying to knock each other out, et cetera. Just that connection. I felt like a connection that I've never felt before within the industry. And that's something that stood out for me as a player and as a businessman. I'm not sure if that's there every single year, but this connection was just so strong this year. That stood out to me amazingly.
I think the positivity was higher this year than I've ever seen. With summer and all these massive buy-ins and all the cash games and everything, it's exhausting, not just for the players, but for the operators and all the staff. And before I even talk any further about summer camp, just big congratulations to everybody. I think everybody knocked it out of the park, from the dealers to the floor staff, to the dealer coordinators, to management and above and everything. I think everybody had a great summer. I think the players appreciated that. I think it felt more of a, we all have a job to do and we're all competitors. You know, there's a lot of competitors here. But there felt like there was a little bit more unity. What's really cool to notice, and it gets better every year, but there was some hiccups this year. But what's really cool to notice is the World Series poker, everybody's waiting. All the other operators are waiting. We're waiting. And then come late January, early February, somewhere around there, we're all just sitting there like this, waiting. And then they release their schedule and like, all right, now it's go time. That's when our summer for operators starts in February. It's like we start hiring, we start planning, we start doing the schedule. And the schedule is a huge part. And what felt really cool this year, it seemed like with a lot of events, especially specialty events, of course, if I'm running a $400, no limit hold'em event, and you're running a $400 no limit hold'em event on the same day, that's okay. No problem. If I'm running a $350 ladies event and you're running a $350 ladies event, that's an issue. You know what I mean? Should be trying to. And it's not like we're banding together. We're still competitors. So I can understand some people trying to, be competitive in certain spots. But all that does it, if we're competing directly for specialty tournaments against each other on the same day, all you're hurting is the player base.
I was about to say that's when it comes down to player centricity. Right. Are we making decisions based on what's best for the players? Right. And I know you take that to heart as much as you possibly can in your role, more than a lot of people that I know. I know your whole team does. But I was about to say it comes down to that player centric decision making. And I think you're right. And I think there were a couple times where that happened this year, but I bet next year it won't happen nearly as much because some of them were just
It gets better every year. And there are some really awesome guys in the industry that kind of like push the envelope with saying, hey, don't have these events on the same day. Like come to the operators and say, hey, please, can you make sure that you don't run these events on the same day? Yeah. You got guys like Kenny Hallert that puts out this awesome spreadsheet of all the schedules and everything, everybody's schedule. So it's not like everybody doesn't have this information up front, but sometimes hiccups do happen and little one-offs happen here where you look at an event and you're like, oh man, we got an event coming up and so does across the street and so does over there. Right. We actually had this happen and I ended up making a decision with maybe 8 days to go. I actually canceled an event because it was a very similar event going on. And I wanted those players to get the best experience they have, even if it meant not at my house, even if it meant me losing a revenue stream there, it was better for the industry and better for those players. So I just dropped in a no limit hold'em event, knowing we'd still have a great event.
Oh yeah. And there wouldn't be much change from a revenue perspective. Right.
No. It wasn't about revenue. It was just about saying, hey, we understand there were what I noticed with, like I said, about 7 to 10 days ago, there was a lot of gripes online. How can you guys be running this event at the same time as, the other? And I explained to everybody, I said, hey, I don't mind modifying or canceling our event so that you guys have the best experience, cool, even if it means somewhere else. And I think, like I said, We're not, you know, it's like the Rounders quote. We're not necessarily playing with each other, but we're not playing against each other either. You know what I mean? It's
I love that quote.
Yeah, it's
that's the only movie I have downloaded on my computer is that movie. Every flight I watch it from the land of the Vegas.
I can totally see that fanboy.
Shut. I'm gonna find a new co-host really quick. By the way, how do you like this cup? Yep, that's right. 2007, 2011. Let me go ahead and take a sip of my water.
What have you done for me lately?
Get out of here. Talk about fanboy. You probably have a poster of Tom Brady and a Speedo in your office. On the other side. So listen, you mentioned awesome people in the industry, right? And I want to kind of wrap this section off talking about the summer, about some news from certain players or certain people. And I mean, no better person than Chris Moneymaker in my mind to be selected for the Poker Hall of Fame. I was so happy to see that. And I've gotten to know Chris a little bit. He's always been supportive of Faded Spade. Beat his tail in fantasy football once. Kind of beat his tail at poker a couple times. He's going to give me some crap for that. But he is such a great person. When I met him at Run It Up Reno, the guy took pictures with every single person that asked him. He was genuinely polite, genuinely kind, genuinely loved the game. And think about it. His win was what, 18 years ago? No, not 18 years ago, but 15, 16 years ago. And he is still a public figure in this industry doing great things to show the positive side of what we do. And I was so glad to see him in. So I wanted to give him a shout out and just talk about that a little bit. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, 2003 is a long time ago. And if we went back to 2003 and looked between 16. Then and now and looked at some of the players that have come and gone, I mean, there's a lot of players that have come and gone. This game, obviously, like any game, can get the best of you for sure. And, that goes back to the studying and stuff like that. Obviously, Chris has evolved his game. He doesn't play his 2003 game anymore. He's evolved. He's out there learning. He's out there traveling, and he continues to love the game. That's like the best word you could use for he loves the game. And with that, he loves being an ambassador for the game. And this will be a topic for another day. We can definitely talk about this. You know, do main event champions owe the general poker public, you know, do they owe them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I understand. I don't know the answer. But I think it's a great topic to discuss. And even more than that, like not just poker champions, but influencers. Like if you're an influencer in the industry, or if you've had some success, do you have the responsibility to represent the industry really well and help move it forward in a positive way? Right. I kind of believe you do, but I know there are a lot of people who are like, don't believe that. And I think that's a really good, you know what we should do? We should actually have different people on for that and have like a 4 or 5 person debate on that on the Faded Spade podcast.
Yeah, I love it. I love that you believe that they do owe something back to the community and stuff like that, which is great because I'm going to play the other side of that coin where I honestly believe that, and we won't get into it today. I know we're already like,
juicing we're good. This, video can be edited. Let's roll.
I honestly believe that you're putting up your own money. You're not a professional athlete that's being paid by a team and an owner and stuff like that. There are many, and I don't want to call anybody out for saying that they're not ambassadors, but there are guys that have won the main event and fade away.
Right.
You know, $8, $9, $10 million and just fade away. And that's okay. Yep. I think that that's okay. If you continue to go on the circuit and stuff like that, maybe there's a little bit there, but I don't really believe you owe anybody like pictures, or I think it's fantastic when they do. And I think we can have favorite players based on that. Chris is one of my favorite players. Because he does stuff like that, because he does have a genuine love for the game. Because I'll tell you, if I won the main event, I would be the same way. I would take every picture. I would answer every question. I would be on.
There's
every...
a needle there somewhere so bad.
People are looking up my hand to see if it's possible right now. But yeah, definitely a conversation for a later day. And, you know, we can definitely get some really good guests on to spiral down that one, but
no doubt, man, no doubt. And then, rounding this out, you know, I don't know him, but just the, support we saw for Gary Gates. Wow. You know, I know Donnie Peters, who's become a friend, and I know Gary is a very good friend of Donnie's. So it was so cool to see how it seemed like the whole poker community just rallied behind the guy. And it seems like anybody who was anybody that knew him had nothing but positive things to say. And, you know, you always root for the underdog, or you root for kind of one of your own, or et cetera. But I feel like the guy won, even if he didn't win. And I feel like the poker community as a whole kind of won, even though he didn't win, because it showed something that so many people I don't think get to see. And it showed how supportive of an industry we are. It showed like the outpouring of kind of love and appreciation and backing for people within the community when you do the right thing, or you are a genuine person, or you handle your business the right way. And I feel like the whole industry won, not just Gary, not just, you know, the community, but the whole industry won, people seeing that support, love, and appreciation.
Yeah, for sure. Gary's been in the industry for a very, very long time. And he's, you know, he's one of us. He's a regular guy. Not that everybody there isn't a regular person, but he's just an industry guy. And he, you can tell he loves the game, and he's been in the game for so long. It was really, really cool to see him not just make the final table and have such an incredible run. You know what I mean? Nine people have to make the final table and one person has to win every year. So we're going to have lots of adventures but he was so engaging with the Twitterverse and all the people that were rallying behind him and stuff like that. It was really cool after he got his fourth place. And I think he locked up 4 million. I could be wrong there. It was either 3 or 4 million.
Once you get past 1 million, you know, what's another million or a couple hundred thousand, you know, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. once he finished with everything, he went back on Twitter 10 days and literally liked and engaged with every single post. And that's you know, we say, you know, not all heroes wear capes.
Well, yeah.
Gary Gates is a superhero. I mean, to be able to do that, that's incredible. And that's why he has the support that he has. And that's why he's loved the way he is. So congrats to him. And, you know, it's really cool to see, but.
So cool, man. Well, let's do this. So, you know, I know there were some other things we wanted to talk about, but I want to get to your interview. And hey, we're going to do a lot of these. We're going to try to do these at least, you know, biweekly. But I want the people to get to know you and what makes the Poker Boss tick. I want them to get a feel for what types of interview questions we're going to be asking our guests, more than just the standard stuff you hear, get some of the backstory. So why don't we wrap up the grind and just say, you know, a few other things to look forward to going forward after the summer. I think World Poker Tour starting season 18 is just impressive and phenomenal. And away they go, right? You know, looking forward to Triton Million over in London. I'll be there. Fortunate enough for them to choose Faded Spade RFID cards for their feature table. Obviously, I know a lot of things are happening on the circuit events too, but here we go. I mean, World Series of Poker and the summer camp might be over, but I don't see things slowing down too much to round out the year.
No, we're doing well, and you know, the industry as a whole is doing well from the players and the operator side. We get this, there's a lot going on, and I'm looking forward to the next 12 months. It's going to be really exciting. There's some things that even I can't talk about right now, and there's some very exciting things on the horizon for the entire industry, and a little closer to home here in Las Vegas. So fingers crossed.
All right, well, let's do this. So. We've gone through like the on the clock segment, our first one. We've gone through the grind, right? You guys got a feel for what we're trying to do with those. I'm sure they will evolve as our podcast evolves. We're also going to have a QA session as we get going. So again, you can hit Sean up at the Poker Boss, me at Tom Wheaton _, or at Faded Spade Cards. Send us a message if there's a question you have. We're going to feature a few questions here during the Ace Queen question and answer session. And so we'll give a shout out to you on Twitter. We'll give a shout out to you on the podcast. So feel free to send those in. No question is off topic. And then we'll choose a few every single week or two that we do this podcast. So that will also be a segment. So let's get into this interview, right? So basically what's happening here is I'm going to interview you in a way you would likely interview your industry leader guests, right? Fire. And then I know next time you're going to interview me in a way that I would kind of interview the entrepreneurial type guests. So I just want to start with people getting to know you. So who are you, Sean? Where are you from? What are your roots? You know, give me the tale of tape of Sean McCormick, you know, from the time you were born and kind of growing up.
You've already said how old I am. So
well, we're right around. Look, I only say that because you've got about 6 months on me. I turn 40 next year, right? So, but we're not old. We are in our prime. How's that?
I feel like my mom's going to pull out one of the picture book and it's going to have like dust as I open it up. And
I'm going to contact her. I'm going to get those for any video post editing. So,
well, the cool thing is when we get your pictures from when you were a baby, you have the same hair you did then. So let's get going. So, obviously, I'm the poker boss. That's, you know, that's something that I kind of stuck with me probably about 6-7 years ago. People started calling me the poker boss, but where it all began was in a small town just outside of Boston, Massachusetts. Born and raised in Massachusetts my whole life, and got into cards pretty early. My dad loved playing all kinds of card games. He was a big, he played a lot of, like, with me, he'd play like crazy eights, you know, because you gotta play the games of the kids at Uno.
But were you drinking? Was it the drinking game, crazy eights?
No comment.
Right.
Just coffee in there.
Yeah.
but my dad loved playing card games and used to, he would play in little games at, like his local, like VFW with like his other, Vietnam buddies and stuff like that. And, probably before I was old enough to 100% before I was old enough to be in these rooms, you know, I was the kid cleaning up like the peanut shells and, cool. You know, making sure everybody's drink was cold and stuff like that, you know? I learned card games and, fell in love with them, right away. And,
so your dad was pretty much your gateway and your inspiration to where you like your passion for cards actually came from. It sounds like.
Correct. And, obviously we all have a lot of stories of playing Nicolani and stuff like that on the kitchen table. I obviously took off with cards a little bit more than the average person, started making treks to like Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun at some point. And then, I actually, it's funny, people are like, oh, well, did you just get into cards where, you know, a lot of kids have stories where they were like in high school and college playing online poker. And I'm way before that. Not that I didn't play online poker, but I'm way before that. It was more like games with your friends and stuff like that. But believe it or not, I actually went to school for computer engineering. And
Now where did you go to school?
No comment.
Okay.
No comment.
It was that good of an experience, huh? Oh, God,
no. I went to Harvard. That's what I wrote on my resume. I went to a very small school just outside of Salem, Massachusetts. It was called North Shore College. Cool. And it was a 2-year school. And I ended up playing more cards than I did anything else. I had a love for computers my whole life. I used to take them apart, love the hardware end, love the software end, still know how to write code to some extent, although that's one thing where you don't use it, you lose it for right. sure. But,
well, it's another language, right?
Oh yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's pretty crazy, to keep up with. And it's pretty crazy to see how far it's come from when I was doing things back in the late '90s. But, I ended up, moving to Florida. A buddy of mine opened a business and, not far from where you are right now, believe it or not. He actually moved to Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And I lived there for all of 2 weeks. And I was like, oh my God, it was too slow of a town for me. It's a beautiful town.
It's a very big town, but a little slow.
It's enormous. But it was a little slower paced than what I wanted at like the young age of like 22. So I ended up moving to Orlando, where it was a little bit more happening. And I actually got into a lot of home games at the time. And one day a buddy of mine was like, oh, you like poker a lot. Why don't you like work in poker? I said, isn't that what we're doing? Like, we're playing cards. What do you mean? He goes, no, we have card rooms out here where people like deal poker. And I was like, okay. And probably brushed it aside at first, but eventually got with Daytona Beach Kennel Club.
Oh yeah. My home poker room, man.
Very different than it was when I dealt there. When I dealt there, it was there.
You could only buy in for like $100 before they made the rules more like Las Vegas.
Way before that, Tom. Yeah. Way before that. 2003, all you could do was play for $2 a bet. $2, $4, $6 capped at $8. It was $2 limit. That was the highest you could play. I left Florida before the $100 no limit game started. And now I know you guys have uncapped games and stuff like that, which is really cool. That it's evolved. But yeah, I got into poker there, and eventually another buddy of mine was doing events for the World Poker Tour, and they invited me to deal at an event in Tunica. And I actually met a lot of people from Las Vegas, Bellagio specifically, that said, wow, you're a pretty good dealer. If you're ever in Las Vegas and want a job, let us know. And of course, this is way back when. So a lot of people are like, well, how do I do what the poker boss has done? Like, and there's a lot of parts that still are, you know, that work today. And there are some parts that don't. Yeah. Right. People weren't just asking people out the street, hey, you want to come deal? Like it used to be like that. But, and eventually, I ended up leaving Florida, moved out to Vegas, started dealing. I think I dealt 1 year at the World Series and then started dealing at Bellagio in the fall. Never looked back.
So dealing was your entry point, right? So that was the first job you had at a poker room was dealer. That was your entry point. That's like, wow, that's awesome. So look, I run a card company and I can't deal with a damn. So, you know, maybe you could show me a few things.
Yeah,
so
right.
That's so cool. So you start in Florida. So and I want to talk about this because I think there are a lot of people who maybe are trying to build a personal brand, whether it's on purpose or whether it's just through happenstance, and they're like, oh, well, hey, I could possibly have something here. And the Poker Boss has become a personal brand for you now. And I think you've done a good job growing it. So were you the Poker Boss when you started, or was that like an evolution? Like talk to the listeners about that.
So when I first started, it was just Sean. Yeah. And Sean still exists to some extent in the industry. I do admit that a lot of people do call me the Poker Boss, and it's fine. I have stuck with the moniker and I like it. But no, in the beginning it was just me. And, you know, these were back in the day when I was single and, you know, just doing my thing and, making my cash in my pocket and walking out of the casino every day. And, that was the same for Florida as it was when I moved to Las Vegas. And then probably around 2009, I made a conscious decision. I said, hey, you know what? I want to run one of these rooms.
That was a decision. You were dealing up into that point. Your career was kind of steady. And you said, you know what? I want more from my career. I want to eventually run a room. Like, was that that was an intentional decision you made to try and pursue that?
100%. I just one day was like, you know what? This is the other side of the felt, so to speak, really interests me. Like, how do these poker rooms work? And I just started learning all the different parts that I could. And I tell people all the time, you want to learn as much as you can and surround yourself with the industry leaders as much as you can without being a nuisance.
That's a delicate balance, man. Yeah, I mean, that's really a delicate balance. And any type of corporate career or you know, growth like you're doing, it's a balance for people to learn. Like, how do you build relationships with folks who could have like an impact on your career, but then not just be this like annoying kid that's just trying to grow. Yeah. So I'm glad you said that, because I think a lot of people probably struggle with that.
Yeah, it's definitely, balance is a good word. And I tell people all the time, you know, just surround yourself with those people and just watch what they do on a daily basis. And in any industry, poker is not the only one that this holds true, but in any industry, you have to be careful sometimes because, and I my leadership style is the exact opposite of what I'm about to say, but there are many people in a lot of industries that look at you that say, hey, I want to learn what you do. I want to mimic what you do. I want to become better, to be closer to, you know, doing what you do. And they look at you like you're a threat. So, oh,
God, 100%. I've dealt with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tell people all the time, you know, I'm never threatened by someone who wants to learn my job. You know, anybody who I work with today, if they came up to me and said, hey, can I shadow you for a day? Absolutely. I'll set a day aside. I don't know, you know, over 200 people work in the poker room where I'm at. And if all 200 said, I want to mirror you, which of course that wouldn't happen, but if they wanted to shadow me, I would make a day for every single one of them and say, let's do it. You know, because knowledge is not just power for the individual, but it's power for the group. And, you know, we only get better by having a open idea channel between everybody. It's not my way or the highway, which unfortunately, a lot of poker room managers still lead by that saying. And it's just not good, because you'll eventually not have growth.
Right.
So,
I mean, you might call yourself the poker boss in terms of character development and something that's fun, but, you know, you don't lead with an iron fist. Right. And I think that's very important for people to take away. And in my corporate background, which we'll get into another time, but I've always felt like those with like a servant leadership mentality are the ones who grow the most and the ones whose people grow the most. And I think that's a really important takeaway, you know, that you're sharing with our listeners, because that's the truth. So what job was your first job when you said, you know what, this is an intentional decision, I'm going to go for this, I'm going to learn this? Like, what was your first like supervisory role or operational type role after being a dealer?
So, I went from being a dealer at Bellagio, from 2006 to 2008. It was around that time that Aria was already starting to be built. And, you know, at Bellagio, we knew 100% we're going to lose some of our staff to the newest, greatest property in the MGM Resort family. And, you know, at that time, we had to realize, okay, our staff is probably going to get split to the point where we're going to need to start making leaders for property A and leaders for property B, which is funny because it's Aria and Bellagio, A and B. So, you know, at that time, I made a decision along with my bosses. Obviously, they had some input on it, that I would remain at Bellagio and start learning ropes, because I was still kind of like the young pup, so to speak.
Yeah.
At Bellagio. So it's not like I was going to handpick being a shift manager or full-time supervisor at Aria. That wasn't the case. Right. You know, there were people already in spots that were going to handpick those spots. And obviously whoever ran that room was going to get to decide who they had in those leadership roles. So, in 2008, I started learning the flooring end. And I wouldn't call flooring in poker necessarily operations. You have a lot of job duties, but you're not working with advertisement and budgets, and you know, you don't really have contact with human resources and all kinds of all the vendors and everything. You're not really in operations. You're just facilitating the poker room for that day. You're learning, and that's a very key role. I always tell people that the best people in this industry are the ones that have experience. First and foremost, at dealing, you have to know what those dealers go through. And then you also have to know what floor supervisors go through. There's a lot of industries where if you have managerial experience, you can go from being you know, a Domino's Pizza store manager to a store manager of, you know, any other, a Best Buy or something like that.
Marketing manager in the healthcare industry could be a marketing manager in the resort industry. Right.
100%. But in poker, that's not really the case. We're a hands-on job and we're a people person job. You have to know your clientele. So learning it from the dealer's point of view and then learning it from the floor supervisor's point of view gets you to learn people. And there's no bigger skill in poker than people, like being able to work with people.
I feel like in life, especially going forward, I mean, it's such an important skill. And you all right? I got a cup for you.
Let's edit that out.
So what would you say to people who kind of took that path? So you got your first entry level operational job, right? It's at the Bellagio, right? And you knew what your next steps were. What advice would you give people who are in that, you know, place of their career where, hey, maybe they just got their first kind of operational job and they see a path for themselves to get to that next level? You know, what would you share with them? Or what would you share in terms of how you conducted yourself to get that next opportunity?
First and foremost, make sure you're working for someone who will show you the way, so to speak. You're working with someone or for someone. I don't like using terms like work for me and stuff like that, or my team or stuff like that. And I think that's a good thing to first and foremost, look for that person who treats you always as an equal.
Yeah.
Because if you don't like who you're working for or with, it's never going to work out.
Right.
Secondly, hone those customer service skills. It is so important in our industry. You hear people all the time. The between the dealers and the floor staff, those are your first point of contacts. Those are your last point of contacts in any program. It's not directors. It's not managers. It's not vice presidents. It's none of that. It's dealers and floor people. And if those people give you a negative experience, you won't go back. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how you win, lose, or draw. Yeah, people like to play where they win, but poker doesn't really work that way. Although perception-wise, we might think it works that way. But how your experience is what makes or breaks any poker room. And the first thing I always tell people when they come work with me is, we are not in the poker business. And you can see their eyes like light up, like, okay, am I in the wrong building? Am I, right. You know, am I in the wrong room? And I tell people all the time, we are in the guest experience business. That's all it takes. Give the guest the correct experience when they come in and make sure they're having the, you know, make sure you're thanking them for coming in and welcoming them back when they're leaving. Obviously in poker, you have to pick your spots. You just watch the guy lose with, you know, aces full versus quads. Don't say, thanks for coming and we can't wait to see. But I've seen people. So it's things like that. Make sure the guest experience is good. Obviously, understanding social cueing from your guests in poker is very important. But sorry about losing with that straight flush. Is probably not.
I remember when I busted from the Party Poker Live Millions. I was down like 50 or 60 big blinds, and it was my fault I was down that far. But I remember I got in nut straight against a set against the low straight, and when the guy hit his full house on the turn or something, all of a sudden, like, I stand up and I'm kind of like in shock a little bit. And you were the first person to walk over, and it wasn't, hey, it was, let's go get a bourbon, you know? And I think it's right, because what I'm talking about is empathy. Like, I really think, like, as an operator, as a player, what I'm looking for from an operator sometimes is empathy, is sure. Understanding. Like, if I have some type of gripe at the table, or if I have some type of desire at the table, or a question, or something just happened to me, you know, the player has much of a, is probably going to have like a victim mentality, right? Or they just want to be heard. And it doesn't matter to me if the operator, you know, makes a ruling or handles a situation in a way I don't like. If I'm treated with respect and empathy and understanding, that place has earned my business, and that person has earned my respect for the rest of my poker playing career.
Yeah, and that's all you can ask for. And I was literally, and I'll give a little story real quick. It's real short.
That was my next question. Give me an example. Like, share a time where, you know.
Well, I was in a poker room one time, and this is probably, it wasn't that long ago. And you feel like things are changing naturally in the world, like how people are talking to people, how people to some extent are walking on eggshells, how they talk to people. But there are times where that is the correct play. I literally saw someone take a bad beat in a poker room, and you know, turn like something that might even qualify as like a bad beat, like it was aces full beat, and they were felt it, and they looked at the supervisor. They stood up and looked at the supervisor and said, "Do you have any bad beats?" obviously clearly asking about jackpots. And the supervisor's response that was standing there watching his chips being pushed away goes, yeah, we have a bad beat every hand, but, you know, we don't give anything away for it. And I kind of did one of these, like I kind of just like looked away and I was like, part of me working in this industry, I was quite embarrassed for that person. I was like, man, that is not, just answer the question. You just saw it and there's no way this person missed it. The person reacted and oh man, like they were frustrated, understandably. And I, you know, people always ask all the time, like, what's the correct response when you get frustrated at the table? There's no blueprint for that. As long as you're not directing something at a staff member, a dealer, or another player, it's pretty much it's an adult game. Poker's an adult game.
Yeah.
We're not going to let you F-bomb at the top of your lungs.
Right, no.
But, I work in a room now and it's my philosophy that if someone was like, you know, they like bleep, you know, and I don't have to bleep myself on this podcast, but you know what I'm saying? If they just like, fuck, you know, like this, cause they took a bad beat, I'm not kicking the guy out. Although I do know rooms that believe that, like no profanity ever at the table. I think that's a little extreme. There's a middle ground there, but definitely as operators and people in the industry, we can't needle people, openly needle people, unless you really know the person. And even that might be, I know people very well, and I wouldn't, I might needle you, Tom. I'm not going to needle you in a 10K event.
No, I get it. And you should, like, you know what I mean? Because there's a personal relationship there. So let's take a 5-minute pause from the interview. Because what I wanted to go back to in the interview is go back to, all right, hey, look, you built yourself up into this job now. I want people to know, like, I'm sure there were trials along the way where you were tested, right? And had to fight through them. And I want people to hear that because I think there's a lot of people that have a hard time fighting through some of the trials in their career. So let's get to that. But you brought up needling, right? And talking about the way you treat a player during a certain circumstance. So let's talk about during the World Series of Poker, that whole issue that occurred with Jack Effel. Right. His name is escaping me right now.
Dario.
Yes. Dario, I was rooting for you there, buddy. Heads up. So anyway, didn't mean for your name to slip my mind. So let's talk about that because I want to take 5 minutes to talk about that. And you know us, 5 minutes turns to 10 minutes, but whatever. We've got some time and it's our show. So
what are they going to do? Kick us out?
Kick us off the air. Right. So, okay. So, I'm going to share my opinion on this. Okay. And again, this is the opinion of Tom Wheaton, not Faded Spade as an organization. I have met Jack a couple times. I have a lot of respect for Jack. And my opinion is that, yes, Jack could be someone to try and like have a very direct, maybe needle in that situation. Sure. But I don't think he needled anybody. I don't think he was saying like, if then, I think he was just reestablishing the rule that the rule is you call 17, you call 22 because of how it played out. Now he got a lot of heat from the players and whatever for needling. And maybe Jack has that kind of stereotype. I don't know, but I believe he wasn't needling. And I think he was just reiterating the rule, right? Maybe that's not popular, but that's what I believe. So what do you think?
I've seen the video and I know there's like a really long one, like 11 minutes or something like that.
I haven't seen that one.
I will tell you from, you know, I can only speak as an operator. I've never actually been a tournament director. It's probably the only position in the poker room that I have not held. And I don't want to even fathom the immense pressure you're under.
Oh God.
And ESPN is there in your face the whole time. Like, when I talk to players, and I've had to come to tables to, reiterate or double down on a ruling that a TD or even my tournament manager has made who has far more experience in tournaments and far more knowledge, than I do. But, those are tough spots. I don't think Jack knowing that the cameras were on him would intentionally needle the player.
Right.
I understand how it came off. I do. Yeah. And apparently there's previous history there between Dario and Jack that I don't know about and I don't want to even speculate about. But I will say this. We all know, and I think everybody knows, that the ruling is correct.
Right.
Based on the rule, and people will say that that rule opens up players to, you know, getting misinformation from a dealer or someone else and not being protected. But the game is visual first. It will always be visual first. There's a lot of reasons why someone won't be able to say, can you double count that? Are you 100% sure? And you're not, with two tables left in the World Series playing for millions of dollars, going to look at a fantastic dealer. And I can't remember her name, but I know she's amazing from everything I've heard. You're not going to look at her on TV and say, are you sure? Because the game would slow down if we did that every time.
Right.
But players do have the responsibility to protect themselves. And it's the only way the rule could go. There is rules in place for gross misunderstanding of the bet. If the dealer had said $3 million, it was $30 million. The ruling is different.
Right.
And I don't want to exactly go into that because, because a lot of people view it differently. In this case, 17 to 22 is not a gross misunderstanding of the bet, even though it's a lot of chips in play at the time. As for Jack, again, I think I agree with you. I always give the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
I don't think he was intentionally trying to needle Dario. And from what I heard, it was posted online, Jack did apologize for the way it could have been perceived and came across. He didn't want anybody to think, and that's the right thing to do.
Oh, 100%. That doesn't surprise me. And as much as I don't know Jack well, but the time I do know him, he's very direct. Yeah. And sometimes being direct can not be taken the right way by people. So it's like, I empathize with Dario because if I'm in that spot, I am just, things are going through your head so quick. Right. And then you got party that's feeling like, oh, what did I do? And party that's like, but wait a minute, it was wrong. And it's like, do you take accountability? Do you not? And it's in the moment and there's all this going on. And the other thing I was thinking about is this: Jack can't overrule that decision. Three of his people made the right call. For Jack to then come over and overrule that, you know, then that causes a whole other type of controversy, right? You know, thinking about it that way. But I'm glad to hear, you know, Jack seems like a stand-up guy, that he even apologized for the potential misinterpretation. But I think, and the reason I brought this up is because of, you know, you mentioned empathy, or we mentioned empathy before, and then we started talking about rulings. I do think that had the situation been handled by any tournament director or poker operator with empathy first, none of that happens, right? But you also don't know what the heck the guy's dealing with.
Sure.
Think about the things him and his team dealt with during the WSOP. Guys dropping their freaking pants and throwing shoes, right? People fighting, this and that. Like, so it's like, you never know what someone is dealing with in the moment. So my opinion is, I don't think it was a needle. Could it have been handled a little bit differently? Sure. But, you know, it's the way it is.
For sure.
So, all right, cool. But I wanted to take that minute to talk through that because I think it's an important topic from the summer and really wanted to hear your thoughts as an operator. So, all right. So all of a sudden you start growing in your career, right? And you kind of get to the point where you're at now, but I'm sure it was a long journey. So did you ever have to face any trials and tribulations where maybe you wanted a job but didn't get accepted for it, or you felt like you were ready and someone thought you weren't ready? Like, what would you say? What can you share about that if it's ever happened to you? And what would you share with people who go through that? Because folks go through that all the time in their careers.
Sure. I will say this: whenever you go through the process, doesn't matter what it is, if it's poker, if it's sports, if it's your dream job, anything, it's a process, and you're not supposed to hit home runs and grand slams every single time. So what I tell people is, if you go to an interview and it doesn't work, don't get discouraged. If you go to an audition and it didn't work, don't get discouraged. Enjoy the process. Learn from the process, grow from the process. You know, in the beginning, I would say it was easier. And, you know, going from supervisor to shift manager was just a learning experience, like pushing myself to the limit without pushing everybody else. You know what I mean? Like showing my value, showing my importance, showing the fact that I wanted to learn and grow, and making myself valuable to the operator at the time and saying, hey, here's what I'm bringing to the table. And if it didn't work out, try again. If it didn't work out, try again. After I was a shift manager, Bellagio, I actually became their operations manager, which is one step in our company underneath the director of operations, my current role. And, you know, when I was in the shift manager role, and this still holds true today, it's kind of funny, like I grabbed my niche, you know, so to speak, in poker. I became the mix game guy.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I played a lot of mix back in the day. I still do now. You know, I play like 4-8 or up to like 9-18 or 10-20 or something. Like, I don't play big anymore. But, you know, I thortoughly enjoy the non-hold'em games, even some of the non-PLO games. And God, we could go for hours talking about how many different mixed games there are today. Every day they're inventing a new one, Dramaha and Archie and all of that, but whatever. Like, but yeah, exactly. Back in the day, it was a lot more simplified, but still very complicated for a lot of people because the 99% of the time you're dealing hold'em. And, you know, 0.5% of the time you're doing PLO. And that's grown a little bit more over the years. But there were a very small community of people that played games like Deuce to Seven Triple Draw, which we've seen more of these days. You know, Omaha 8-a-Better has been around for a long time, all the horse games. But with the addition of all these newer games, people were falling, behind, but they weren't educating themselves as much on it. So I looked at it and said, you know what? There's my value. If I learn these games better than anybody by playing them and by ruling on them and by reading about them and studying them, people are going to need me. And that was just a small thing. That was just
small. So smart though.
Yeah. That didn't make me prepared to be a director. That didn't make me prepared to be an ops manager or anything like that. But that did put me in a different life for some other people where they go, wow, he genuinely takes an interest in this. He's not just doing this for the room, he's doing this for personal growth. So, like I said, even still today, I do get calls sometimes from properties all around the country, or even sometimes around the world, who go, "Hey, how do you rule on this in this game?" And I'm like, "Oh, this is how."
Now, when these folks call you, do they call you Sean, or do they call you the poker boss?
I hope people call me Sean. Again, I just
excuse me, Mr. Poker Boss. This is blank blank from London. How'd you handle this situation? Or if someone says, "Hey, Sean," do you say, "Excuse me, can you please call me the Poker Boss?"
Well, now that we've had this conversation about the difference between a boss and a leader, I might have to change my moniker to the Poker Leader.
I'll take the Card Boss. There you go. Yeah. And then what we'll do is a fun heads up battle.
It doesn't sound good, the poker leader. I got into that operations manager role, and that's where it really opened up. That's where my eyes really opened up. Yeah. And I started learning about financials and how to, you know, properly budget a room, and, you know, what it takes to work with advertisement or vendors that, you know, partners that sell cards even. You know what I mean? What's
the difference? I don't know any of those guys. Bunch of card slinging people.
Yeah. I just started learning the business from a very different end. And that's when I really knew. I was like, man, I want to run one of these rooms. I want to inspire others to want to do the same thing. And, eventually, and I tell people this all the time and they say, you know, what's something that I can't learn or I can't obtain or something like that in business? What's the one thing that got you through to your position today? And I tell people a lot, and this holds true in a lot of businesses, there is luck involved. And people look at you like you're crazy. And I'm like, there's dedication and hard work and perseverance and putting in the time, putting the effort, all those things that you can't put a number on a piece of paper about.
Sometimes are all good. And you've got to catch a break.
100% of the way. Yeah. But there are times where something happens. Someone gets promoted. Someone unfortunately gets let go, someone gets reassigned, something like that, where an opportunity now presents itself. And that could absolutely happen to me. It could happen to you. Someone could come along. Someone right now is in their basement working on a better car than Faded Space.
Oh, and I want that. I hope so. Because it's just going to continue to push us. Right. Hey, look what we're doing to the industry giants now.
Yeah.
Right? That's what we're doing right now is someone came along.
I tell people all the time, don't rest on your laurels. Don't think you can absolutely be number one all day long. Because someone is right now not only watching us, learning from us, but devising a plan to beat us, which is good because it pushes us to beat them and back and forth. And that's the healthy competition that I always tell people about. I will never openly knock any of my competitors.
Right.
It will never happen. There's no reason to ever do it.
Nope.
I see people do it online. I see people say, you know, this place down the street or in a different state or something like that. Oh, they're scummy. They do this the certain way. There's no right way or wrong way. And I eventually will bring it back to, I know you want to talk about this eventually, we'll bring it back to reserved games. I know
eventually. Yes.
The industry calls them private. There's a reason, and I'll get into why we don't call them private in Las Vegas.
That is 100% going to be our next on the clock. That's it. It's happening. We're going to fire out of the gate strong, baby.
Maybe it won't be just coffee that day.
listen, I don't mean to interrupt you, but like you said a word, inspire. Like something you want to do and strive to do is inspire people, right? So who inspired you? Were there people that inspired and supported your career growth? And did that come from those experiences or somewhere else?
My mom and my dad. I know that sounds corny.
No, it's not cheesy, man.
They've always supported me and always pushed me to be the best at whatever I'm doing. You know, it's funny to say that I was on a track to be an engineer. And now I'm a director of poker. So believe you me, they every step of the way, they couldn't have been more happy for every accolade, every award, everything, you know, anything I've tried. And they know that there's been a lot of bumps along the way. There's been a lot of failure along the way. And every single time I've taken something from it. Yeah.
Cool.
Industry-wise, man, the list could go on for quite some time. There are some people that, let me give a shout out to a couple of the non-obvious people. I've learned a lot from the Matt Savages of the world and some big, big, huge industry leaders. But I consider these other people huge industry leaders. But first and foremost, Adam Pliska. It's funny. If there is anybody in the industry I could be, it's that guy. He's smarter than us all. And the best thing about Adam is, whether he knows that he's the smartest of us or not, he doesn't throw it in your face. And that is an amazing quality to me, is be the smartest guy in the room while also surrounding yourself with people that you know that are actually smarter than you, and never throw it in anybody's face. I had to have this conversation with a supervisor of mine no more than a week ago. We went for a walk. Really smart kid. I could see him running his own room one day, and I said, hey, here's the deal. At the end of the day, remember, this is poker. This isn't Lockheed Martin. This isn't NASA.
Yeah.
We're not sending rockets to the moon or anything like that. It doesn't make what we do small.
No.
It doesn't make what we do any less of value. There is a value in entertainment to, you know, the human psyche and how we, you know, how we interact every day. Entertainment is a huge part of that. But at the end of the day, we can train people to be good at dealing with poker. What we can't train people to do is we can make them better. But if you don't have it within you to give people good customer service and good guest experience, I can't train that. I'll take someone off the street who's smiling all day long and teach them the difference. My wife to today still doesn't know whether a straight beats a flush. 100%.
Neither does mine. Trust me. She's just like, I go into a poker story and it's like.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, full house is better. unless you're playing short deck. And that, that, like, I lost. But let me just, I want to talk briefly about a couple of people that have really inspired me. Ben Irwin, Thunder Valley, director of operations there. And the guy just loves the game. He just nerds out on the game. And, Paul, Mike, and I always talk about this. We're the self-proclaimed nerds of poker because we just love the game. This guy inspires me every time I see him. This guy, I have never seen someone with so much hustle. This guy, he's the director of operations and he's there. He'll take the tie off. He'll get in the box. He's cleaning up the room. He's doing whatever it takes. He's out on social media. He's going to different events and learning and stuff like that. So I try to model myself after a little bit of what he does. That's why I travel as much as I do.
Oh, yeah.
I try to get out there from Florida to California, everything in between, and even some trips I'm planning outside the country to learn it from that perspective. And Ben just positive attitude all the time. And, he's just amazing.
How much fun was Ben during the Faded Spade TDA tournament?
He had a lot of fun. He had a lot of fun. That's what it's about.
That's great.
Being around your peers and just showing off. And
I think it's really cool that you named somebody that is a peer of yours, right?
Yeah.
I think that's something that, I don't think a lot of people either admit or even are cognizant of, like, the person that has a similar job to yours down the road or across the country could be someone that inspires you to be better and do better. It doesn't have to always be people who are above you. And the same token, it could be people who work for you or around you 100%. That could inspire, right? And I don't think a lot of people realize that. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't think that would be an obvious choice for people.
Yeah. And another guy, and we're completely different jobs. And I don't want to say completely, we both work in poker, but Justin Caritas, Stone's Gambling Hall. I just named two Sacramento guys. What are they going to do? He's in the water in Sacramento. But, this guy loves the game. And, he's one of those guys. I'd love to have him on sometimes, because he has a very interesting story that we've sat down and talked about, where he just made a conscious decision. Like, the light bulb goes off, and it's incredible what that light bulb can do. And he said, this is it. This is what I want to do. And he's got a pretty high level position at Stones Gambling Hall and comes up with creative things for Stones Live, which is their Twitch stream and all this stuff. He's the driving force behind a lot of the poker.
Oh, yeah.
And this guy went to his boss, and I'd love for him to tell this story, but he went to his boss before the summer and said, hey, I want to be better. I'd like to take basically like an 8-week sabbatical, left his job to go work as a floor supervisor at the World Series of Poker. Oh,
we are 100% going to have Justin on.
Who would do that?
Yes.
Who would do that? That's incredible. Yes. You hear the nightmare stories that it takes to run that incredible operation, and it's at the end of the day, I'm sure it feels really great for a lot of people that work there, but most people work there because it's a revenue stream for them. And that, not just to say, hey, I'm sure he would have done it pro bono. I really feel like he would have done it for free, just for the experience of saying, I did this. Yeah. And not only did he do it, he did it in the 50th anniversary year, which was gangbusters. And we talked about it, and I know he had an incredibly tiresome summer. Like, it beat him down, but I know he's going to look back and be like, man, this was absolutely amazing. And what he takes from that, along with what he's already grown in his own personal brand and puts that together, that's just incredible. And that's why we do what we do. So guys like that, that don't just have it all already. You know what I mean? You could name a laundry list of people that are in high level positions in poker that probably aren't going anywhere. You know what I mean? They've established themselves, but these guys that just are willing to take themselves back to step one and learn it again and go back and forth. And that's why I like doing it. And I just, I can really appreciate guys like that.
Cool, man. Well, heck yeah. Shoot. We'll have him on as one of your first, whatever you name your segment, industry leader, guests. I would love to know that story. Yeah. That's a really cool story.
Yeah.
So you're at where you're at now, right? And we talked about, some advice you have for folks who are on the career journey and trying to grow. So you have a great job. right? I think anybody that knows you knows your passion about the job, right? And how much you love being a part of the industry. What's next, man? Like, what other type of goals do you have and objectives do you have, whether it's career related or like personal business related or something out of the box that people might not even know? Like, where do you kind of go from here?
Well, I'm 40 years old. I'd like to be able to dunk again, but that's not
Dude, speaking of that, do you remember, you'll know this because we're around the same age. Do you remember those stretch shoes that you'd put on and they would have like the front like soles and you would do calf raises in them because they would essentially,
oh my God,
strength vertical shoes. Leap.
Strength shoes.
Strength. Yeah, I said stretch. Sorry. Strength shoes. Do you remember those?
Yeah. They had the totally, fat, like, yeah.
Totally had a pair of those.
Of course I had a pair of those.
Oh man. Watching Derek Coleman and Kenny Anderson on the Nets do their thing, like bouncing on the stretch shoes, yeah, dunking on that 8-foot portable backboard.
Yeah, yeah, it's been quite some time since I've dunked the best.
Do those still exist? I have to see if they exist.
No, there's no way. They've actually done studies, and I'm not going to get into sports science, but like your calves aren't really the super driving force to your jump muscle. It's the full leg and everything like that. So okay. You can't have these massive, I've seen guys with massive calves that can't even touch the net. So, I mean, it's not exactly one-to-one on that.
But right, I digress. Anyway, yeah, I digress. Oh, yeah, you want to dunk again. Got it. What else?
What's next? You know, I'm in a really happy spot right now. And I love for people to really understand this, that you're just because, you know, you hear all this stuff on Instagram and Twitter, like, you got to do what's next. You got to be prepared for what's next. To be an entrepreneur, you have to be hungry all the time. They're correct. You have to remain hungry, but you don't have to just keep going 100% every single moment of the day. I firmly believe you need to step back and celebrate your victories. I told my wife this the other day, believe it or not.
I need to hear this right now.
She is the rock of our family, 100%. But she flies so fast sometimes. And I say, you need to step back and celebrate the victory. So right now, July 22nd, my anniversary.
Happy anniversary, bud.
Thanks, buddy.
Doing your first Faded Spade podcast the morning of your anniversary.
8 years. Woo.
8 years married.
Yep. 8 years married. 8 years married. Looking forward to a lot more. So
right there too, buddy.
You know, summer camp just ended. What's on the agenda right now, short term? And I always tell people this, you should always have a short, a mid, and a long-term goal. Short right now, my staff needs to get those vacation times in. They need to go out with their families and friends and wives and girlfriends and everything else and celebrate everything that they've done and take some time off. A little further after that, we're going to bring the whole team back in and we're going to look back on 2019 and say, holy shit, this is the best year yet. And it was. It was. We've done everything this year from Poker Go studio stuff to party poker stuff to World Poker Tour stuff to just expanding the room and having massive cash games and all the new innovations that we came up this year. We're going to sit down and we're really going to just celebrate it. We're really going to celebrate it. And then in the mid, we're going to start talking about really what is next. What does 2020 have in store for us? And like I said, we have some things in the works that, you know, we like I said, we just did a $5 million guarantee. Well, Rob Young's on Twitter talking about the possibility of a $10 million guarantee. Yeah. And of course, I'm doing one of these.
I hope to meet that guy at Millions in London. I hear like nothing but great things about Rob.
He's a great guy. And you talk about someone that loves the game and plays it at a very, very high level. He's a big cash game guy. I don't think he plays a lot of tournaments, right. But you know, he loves the game from both sides of the table and he's really innovative. And you talk about a guy that inspires a team. He, you know, if he asks his team for something, they get it done, not because Rob believes in it, but because they believe in it as well, which is so huge. So huge. Get people to believe in what you believe in. And if they don't find out why and change maybe what your belief is to what, you know, to more of a communal belief. And that's really what poker's about. Don't give up your dreams, but be able to inspire while also compromising. But now I'm digressing. I feel like
I'm going to share something that that I know about you that you haven't brought up yet. I know one of your kind of goals in life is to be a motivational speaker, right? And something you've said, like, you really would love to be able to do one day. So tell me about that, or tell our listeners about that.
So I've been inspired by a lot of different motivational speakers. I listen to a lot of different podcasts and just some monsters in the motivational speaking world that just, it's just, how can you not want to inspire people to be the best version of themselves? I mean, and, you know, I Matthew McConaughey, it's funny, brings up something where he's talking about, I believe he was like the age of 22. And he said, someone asked him, who inspires you? And he said, my 10-year older self is who inspires me. And that's just, when you think about that, when you really boil that down, what does that mean?
Just to think, you smoked a lot of weed that day.
Well, the funny thing is, he says he came back, I believe it was a professor or somebody's talking to, and 10 years later, they came back to him and said, are you the person that motivated you, your 22-year-old self today? Have you made it? Are you that motivational person? He goes, no, it's the person 10 years from now. So we're always growing. We're always learning. We're always moving forward. So, you know, I have a lot of things to work on to be able to reach that goal if I want to get there someday. And there are some things that I've worked on. Believe it or not, it's funny. I could stand on a stage in front of 500 people. You could put a microphone in my ear and, you know, a little talking to people, and I could talk all day long about something I know or something that's inspired me, just like we're doing right now. I would be this natural and this flowing, so I could walk across stage, kind of like Steve Jobs style, you know, with the microphone and comfortable, no dad jeans. But
was that a dig?
Yeah, you wear some dad jeans. I gotta take you shopping, but something that I'm really, and I don't mind admitting this, is if you gave me something to read at a teleprompter, and I'm sitting here, what is this? Oh, it's basketball. And it's a calendar, actually. And I had to read from it and say, speak Tom Wheaton's words or someone else's words. And, you know, like even the opening for this show, and you said, hey, I need you to read this to a group of 500. I would sit there and go, welcome to the Faded Spade. You know what I mean? Like it's a weakness of mine that I've identified. Yeah. And a lot of people are afraid of identifying their weaknesses. I get really nervous public speaking when I'm speaking someone else's words.
Right.
But the good thing is, as a motivational speaker, generally you're talking from the hip.
Right.
It's rehearsed your own words. So that's good for me. But I've had many times where I've had to do presentations. I get through them, but I'm wiping my brow towards the end because I'm like sweating because I'm just reading from a script or something like that, which I've never been comfortable with in my life. So, you know, hopefully today I'm looking at that 10-year older self and that person's inspiring me, like saying, don't worry, continue your craft, continue your journey, and you'll get there. And that's what it's all about, man.
I love it, man. And I think that is an awesome place just to kind of end the interview segment. I think that listeners, Sean, who are on that path, whether they're in poker or not, I think they're going to get a lot of value out of your story, man. And I would encourage people, you know, hit up Sean at the Poker Boss on Twitter. I mean, I know that you like to give this type of advice. So, if folks are in need of advice in the industry, I know Sean will be more than welcome, you know, to provide it when he can. So, I think Sean, I want to thank you for actually being our first guest. And more importantly than that, I'm glad we're doing this. I'm glad we're tag teaming this Faded Spade podcast, man. I, I hope that over the next few episodes, when I guess the seats are turned a little bit and I'm on the hot seat and we talk through our next, you know, on the clock and talk through our next grind and do some questions and answers. Like, I hope this adds genuine value, you know, for our listeners. Yeah. Right. And I know it's fun for you and I to have a forum and to shoot the breeze and talk about some of this stuff. And, you know, obviously it gives Faded Spade some extra branding and puts the Poker Boss out there. But I think the real reason you and I are doing this is because less of us and more of, I think, the stories that we're able to share, the entrepreneurial stories, the career stories, the journeys. I really feel like if one or two listeners out of however many we get, it impacts their life in some way or helps provide direction in some way or just guidance. Like, I feel this is a very meaningful use of our time.
100%. 100%. You know? So, and if I can give you any advice, just remember, when we go live, turn your microphone on.
I really hope it's on. You guys will see a clip of that in the beginning before our actual recording. So, all right, gang. So look, you know, this is a close to the Faded Spade inaugural podcast. We will be back in a short bit of time. The roles will be reversed. We'll have a couple new segments, podcasts from now. We'll have Berkey on to share that awesome entrepreneurial story for Software Y and his background. We'll have Jason Somerville on. I know Stout wants to join us. Jamie Kerstetter wants to join us. And then we're just going to take this and run with it. We're going to take it and run with it. And along the way, listeners, share your feedback at Faded Spade Cards on Twitter, at The Poker Boss for Sean, at Tom Wheaton _. We want you guys to be as much a part of this as us. We'll make it as interactive as we can. And like we said, hopefully along the way, there's some inspiration, some education to help you along your life or business or career journeys. So how about it, Sean? Faded Spade Podcast, version one in the books.
Episode one.
Take it easy, y'all.
See you guys.
The Faded Spade Podcast is sponsored by Duck Duck Productions. Contact them for all of your podcast editing needs at randy@duckduckpro.com.